Well, 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 spook who it is. It's our listeners again, listening to Ooh Spooky. Spook who it is.
Spook?
It sounds more like look.
Oh, spooky.
Spooky.
What's up, everybody? This is Ooh Spooky, the podcast about a book that we found called Murders of the Unknown. What's it called?
Mysteries of the Unexplained.
A book? Don't
you mean a book?
I do mean a book, and I mean to introduce myself, Adam Knox, and also...
Peter Jones.
And also me, Luca Muller.
Don't you mean Luca Muller?
Fucking let's do this all day.
Don't you mean...
We've got five stories every single week from this book of creeps, and we go through and figure out...
Don't you mean... Boo?
We figure out what on earth it is going on with this strange universe we live in. Five more stories today. Peter Jones, the book... Meister, why don't you take
Chip
it through?
Win. This is from the section, the chapter titled Beyond the Walls of Time.
By the way, I just want to point out, we record in my house now and I'm noticing how echoey this room is.
Is it?
I need to be one of those freaks who gets baffling for my living room.
Yeah, your neighbor's definitely not going to worry about that as you're slowly just like, just soundproofing the living room.
Yeah, this is just soundproof locks that I'm getting here to put on the outside of my doors.
I live on my own, you will have noticed.
This is just Glad Wrap for wrapping up all the sound.
This is just a DVD box set of Dexter for inspiration.
I'm going to play this as loud as I can and see if it comes through.
You hear that? I'll close the door. I'm on the other side.
Cool. All right. You couldn't hear it? Great. I think it's finished. Do you want to come in?
Here, lie down on this massage table. And then you jerk him off.
Oh, come on, Pete. You didn't need to make it like a strange thing to do.
That's a funny Dexter.
He just finds
people in cling wrap and jerks them off.
He just finds other serial killers that he's like, they just need some release.
Gets the room all set. Like the intro every the intro sequence every week is him like cutting oranges in a way that it looks like they're coming. Waking up and doing the coffee, but he's like slowly stroking the car. Ah, this guy leads a double life.
By day, night, a gay man.
By day, he's what's the opposite of jerking someone off? What would his job be where he couldn't get found
what's
out?
What's the opposite of jerking somebody off?
Yeah, what job
I
could
hope
he have?
Primary school teacher.
Okay. Yeah, Catholic priest, I suppose.
Oh, that's unfortunate. This first section is from the chapter titled Beyond the Walls of Time. Camille Flammarion, the celebrated 19th century French astronomer, was also a student of the occult, in particular of how the appearance of ghosts might relate to the question of life after death. In his book...
I reckon they relate pretty strongly to that, if they're out there.
They got a fair idea what's going on. In his
this
book,
fucking idiot knows that ghosts exist, but he's like, what do they mean? Could they have some connection to the dead?
In his book, The Unknown, published in 1900, he records how, when he was writing the chapter on the wind in his major work on the atmosphere, Le Atmosphere...
Ooh,
a gale,
is French, I believe.
A gale blew open his window, lifted the loose pages he had just written and carried them off. A few days later, he was mystified to receive proofs of the vanished chapter from his publisher. The wind had carried the papers into a street traversed by the publisher's porter, who often acted as a messenger for Flammarion. The porter had simply picked up the scattered pages of the chapter and taken them to the publisher in the usual way.
That's so weird. I guess he just left them out on the street for me this time. We did have a bit of an argument last week, so I guess so.
There's also a photo here of Camille Flammarion, who has a table filled with lots of papers and next to what is clearly an open window.
Yeah. A big, like, one of those, what do you call them? I think they're called French doors. And he was French. Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. They would have just called them Le French doors.
damn, dude.
Oh, is that it?
That's it, because he was writing it, like he was writing the chapter. Like I like that he was writing a chapter on wind. And as I was writing about wind, the wind took.
Yeah, this sounds like he was late on a deadline. Yeah. He was like, "Oh, crazy, what happened?" But the fact that the porter picked him up.
I can't believe that happened to my favorite Pokemon, Flamerion.
The next
Flamerion, use gust.
if every chapter that he was writing had something about that chapter happen every time, he's like, oh, I'm not looking forward to writing my chapter about when ghosts take shit.
When ghosts take shit.
He realizes at that point he's the ghost. He's just shitting it.
Chapter 12, me getting $1 million. His pages blow away.
It's just the wind. Oh, he's got a fan that oscillates occasionally. All right, the second story is from the chapter Unearthly Fates. Two retired school teachers, Margaret and Wilhelmina Dewar of Whitley Bay.
Is this the second Wilhelmina that we've had in this book? I feel like we've come across that name before.
Yeah, it's one of those names that would have been popular at one point and isn't anymore, so it stands out when you hear it.
Yeah.
But it's common enough that shut the fuck up, Luca. Wait, are they sisters? Do they have the same last name?
Well, they have the same last name, Margaret and Wilhelmina Dewar of Whitley Bay near Blyth, England, were involved in a sensational accident case reported in the British press in 1908. On the evening of March 22, Margaret Dewar ran to her neighbour's house in great distress and told them that she had found her sister burned to death.
And the neighbour said, Dewar?
When the neighbours entered the Dewar house, they found the charred body of Wilhelmina lying on a bed. The sheets and bed showed no signs of fire, nor for that matter did any part of the house. At an inquest, Margaret repeatedly testified that she had discovered her sister's body on the bed exactly as observed by the neighbours. The coroner refused to believe such a preposterous story. How could a body burn up on an unscorched bed?
It's a great question. That judge earned their position.
the only good judge in 1908. Actually, one question. He accused Margaret of lying, threatened her with prosecution for perjury, and postponed the inquest to a later date. Poor Margaret was placed under a tremendous amount of local pressure from both her neighbours and the newspapers. No one would believe her tale. Yeah, because they all think she burned her sister.
Yeah, there's been a number of burnings that were clearly somebody else, not internal combustion. What do you call it?
Spontaneous
combustion. Mm. And every time it's been like some dude getting away with it because the woman he burned was a maid or something. Yeah.
And they're like, well, I just guess they're more flammable than regular people.
Yeah.
you all know that. Your Honor.
You're a judge. We don't know anything about the poor. Other than the fact that my accent
clearly places me amongst them.
Yeah.
Would I do that to one of my own? Would I? What sort of man you think I am, mate? He's trying to fight the judge. You don't spontaneously combust. Have some fucking respect, mate.
Sir, are you representing yourself?
No, I've got two lawyers right here. Punchy and Jabby.
What was the second one?
It's my fist. Jabby and Crossy. Jabby and Crossy.
Jabby and Crossy.
Jabber from Channel V.
This one, no Jab. With this one, I cross my fingers, hope I get out of this.
Yeah. Hope this punch works.
More of an eye poke, shit.
When the inquest resumed, she admitted to lying. She said that what had actually happened was that she found Wilhelmina on fire but still alive on the ground floor of the house. Then she had put out the flames and had helped her sister upstairs, and that there she put Wilhelmina on the bed where she died.
Yeah.
Somehow this story satisfied the coroner more than Margaret's original testimony, although there had been no signs of fire downstairs either.
Well, also, how was she on fire?
Found her on fire, put it out, she was still alive, and then I put her to bed.
Is that it?
Well, no. There's still more to go. But I like that it's just like, well, I know what's good for her. A good for a cold is good for a fire.
You just need to sleep it off. She's screaming. The most
shush, shush, shush. A little bit of chicken soup for my dear sister Wilhelmina.
Be careful, it's hot.
I'll just warm it with you.
After pronouncing a verdict of accidental death by fire, the coroner noted that the case was one of the most extraordinary he had ever investigated. That's the end of it.
Okay.
Cool.
So she definitely lit her sister on fire.
Yeah.
Why would she lie about it?
Well, it also seems that, like... Yeah,
seems
exactly.
Insane.
Maybe she felt guilty for not taking her to a, like, hospital or something. I guess. I mean, I would. If I found someone on fire, was like, I've got the answer. Do nothing. But, like... It seems like people used to burn a lot more often back in the day.
I think it
yeah. Did. Say what you want about gun violence, but it's better than burning people.
Finally, the argument that'll get those fucking liberals.
That's you on Twitter every day.
Hey, at least I'm not fucking burning people, man.
Our founding fathers wanted us to be able to burn people alive whenever we were able to.
You'll take my gun from my hot dead hands.
A well-armed militia, which means them having a whole bunch of matches, is important to a functioning democracy.
This next tale comes from the section Monsters and More. In 1924, one Albert Ostman.
Phew. Glad you corrected that.
A logger and construction worker decided to spend his vacation looking for a lost gold mine, rumoured to be at the head of the Toba Inlet in British Columbia.
Got plans for the weekend. Yeah, gonna probably go have a sniff around for a lost gold mine.
Oh, yeah? What about you?
Yeah, gonna mow the lawn.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, just a quiet one. Yeah.
It's at the Toba Inlet in British Columbia, opposite Vancouver Island.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
Gonna go look for a lost gold mine, eh?
Lost gold mine.
Oh, I hope there's lots of loonies in there.
On his way, an old Indian boatman told him tales of huge hairy beings, big people, living in the mountains near the supposed mine.
Shit.
But Ostman refused to believe Indian fables about mountain giants. Although does believe there is just a random gold mine unattended. I'm not going to believe your nonsense. Yet he would remember the name. Sasquatch.
Shit.
Damn.
Boom. And Sasquatch would remember the name Ostman. Sorry, Ostman. Starting off on foot from the inlet with his rifle, pack sack of food, cooking utensils, sleeping bag and ground sheet, Ostman hiked for a week before settling down in an exceptionally fine campsite between two tall cypress trees near a freshwater spring. The camp turned out to be perfect, except that in the mornings, Ostman would wake up to find that his supplies had been disturbed and some food taken. One night, attempting to stay awake to find out who his visitor was, he climbed into his sleeping bag, fully dressed.
Great job attempting to stay awake. I'll get her my sleeping bag, but this, no, I'll leave my eyes open. I'm just resting them, though, for a little bit.
I'm going to find out who did this, yeah. But I got to be comfy.
Sleeping bag, fully dressed, but for his boots, which he put loosely into the bag along with his rifle. I was awakened, he wrote, by something picking me up. I was half asleep, and at first I did not remember where I was. As I began to get my wits together, I remembered I was on the prospecting trip.
This guy is a drunk.
Oh, that's right. I'm an idiot.
And in my sleeping bag, my first thought was, it must be a snow slide, but there was no snow around my camp.
You fucking idiot.
Has he woken up but not opened his eyes? He's like, okay, where am I?
I got to figure this one out using my other senses. If it's something serious, I'll need to conserve my eyesight.
First guess, snow slide.
No.
Everything's quite dry.
But there was no snow around my camp. Then it felt like I was tossed on horseback, but I could feel whoever it was walking.
like a horse, mate.
Hours of uncomfortable travel passed.
What the fuck? And he's still like, what's going on?
I hope you're taking me to the gold mine. Stifled and cramped inside the bag. He's in the bag.
Oh, so they've like knotted
they've
up.
Zipped him up. fucking rules.
Osman tried in vain to reach his knife to cut his way loose. I like the idea of he's just been jumbled around in a bag that also has his boots and a rifle yeah, in it. Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, no. Eventually, his bearer let him down, dropping his pack sack beside him, and he heard a strange kind of chatter he could not understand. At dawn, he struggled out of his bag and made out the forms of four people.
So he's been in the bag all night.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm a sleep farter. It was bad in there.
Covered with hair and wearing no clothes at all, these are the four people. Ostman knew he must be among the Sasquatch giants the Indian had told him about. As it got lighter, he could see that he was in a valley with mountains all around and that the hairy people seemed to be a family. Old man, old lady, and two young ones, a boy and a girl. They made no effort to hurt him, but they seemed intent on keeping him. All except for the girl.
This is great. This is a reverse Harry and the Hendersons. When the Sasquatch boss comes around, they have to hide him in a cupboard. But he keeps walking out looking for fucking fish or whatever Harry did.
Yeah. Whatever Harry What's did. In that bag? Nothing.
Is that... That bag sounds Canadian.
What are we under the bag?
No, no. That's just our... That's our dog. I can't even think of a fake excuse I'd use in that situation.
What's in the bag? Yeah, yeah. It's a bag full of fish.
That's, we keep the TV in that bag. And the TV's on.
We just got it tuned to the CBC. All except for the girl, who was flat-chested and immature, were quite enormous.
Jeez, Osman.
Osman, can you describe who you saw? Old man, old lady, boy, and a flat-chested girl.
She was really fucking childish.
Old lady, yuck.
Yet Osman thought them human. The young fellow might have been between 11 and 18 years old. Osman.
This guy is a fucking moron.
He's still in the bag. He's just feeling around.
He's either like...
Flat-chested woman.
That's either a small child or pretty much an adult. I've actually gotten back inside the bag, so it's hard for me to tell.
The young fellow might have been between 11 and 18 years old, about 7 feet tall, and might weigh 300 pounds. His chest would be about 50-55 inches. His waist about 36-38 inches. Okay, man.
You've got a 7-year age range, but you're like, I know his waist size.
He wears the same size jeans as me. Puts them on one leg at a time like everybody else.
He puts his bag on one head at a time.
He had wide jaws, narrow forehead that slanted upward around at the back, about 4 or 5 inches higher than the forehead.
Most foreheads go backwards at some point.
The hair on their heads was about 6 inches long. The hair on the rest of the body was short and thick in places. The women's hair was a bit longer on their heads. Okay, come. No, come off it. Bears, men and female look virtually identical. Don't be like, well, actually, the ladies were growing it a bit longer.
The women's hair kind of look like little dresses.
I tried to tie them in ponytails. The women's hair was a bit longer on their heads, and the hair on the forehead had an upward turn, like some women have. They call it bangs.
The fuck? They didn't have fucking work bangs.
Had a little pink bow tie.
He just describes Mrs. Pac-Man.
And the boy was wearing a multicolored cap with a propeller on top.
They call it bangs.
Finally, we have evidence that the Sasquatch exists. Describe them. Well, the lady ones had bangs.
You ever seen Zooey Deschanel? Well, this is like Zooey Deschanel. It's like an animal.
Yeah,
version.
All the Sasquatch were adorkable.
Manic pixie dream bears.
Nowadays, the old lady could have been anything between 40 to 70 years old. She was over 7 feet tall. She would have been about 500, 600 pounds. She had very wide hips and a goose-like walk.
Oh, you fucking weirdo. Oh, man. What is a goose-like walk?
Like a little waddle.
To pick a goose specifically, though, rather than like bird-like or even duck-like.
She was not built for beauty or speed. The man's eye teeth were longer than the rest of the teeth.
What?
I don't know what eye teeth are.
Is it EYE teeth?
EYE teeth.
Is that like front teeth, like canines?
I assume so.
Okay.
The man's eye teeth were longer than the rest of the teeth.
So you have fangs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's your canines.
But not long enough to be called tusks.
Pointies.
I wouldn't have called them tusks.
Oh, okay.
But the teeth were longer than the little one's breast, for sure.
Okay, you're going to have to move on from the flat chest, because you're saying this is a different species. I don't know what breast size you expect them to have.
The old man must have been near 8 feet tall, big barrel chest and big hump on his back, powerful shoulders. His biceps on upper arm were enormous and tapered down to his elbows. His forearms were longer than common people have, but well proportioned. His hands were wide, the palm was long and broad and hollow like a scoop. His fingers were short in proportion for the rest of his hand. His fingernails were like chisels. The only place that he had no hair was inside their hands and the soles of their feet and the upper part of their nose and eyelids. I never did see their ears. They were covered with hair hanging over them. After 6 days in such company, Albert Ostman decided that he had had enough.
What? So he's free to leave at any time. He's like, no, this isn't working out.
Choosing his...
What's he been eating and drinking?
Have they
shit?
Been feeding him, I guess?
He's been in the bag the whole time. Choosing his moment, he fired his rifle, which so startled...
Wait, so he's had a gun for the 6 days?
Oh, God.
All right.
Which so startled the Sasquatch family that he was able to cut and run. Ostman did.
I bet you would be surprised after 6 days if someone was suddenly like, by the way, I had a gun the whole time.
And a bang. I'll see you in the Dunny Diddy committee later. Which so started the Sasquatch family that he was able to cut and run. Ostman did not tell his story for many years, fearing, with some reason, that he might be disbelieved.
Mm-hmm.
But his account of the family of giants rings true, as do the myriad details of his amazing story.
Which part of it rings true?
Well, I don't... None of it.
This guy felt embarrassed about looking for a lost gold mine.
So
that
he made up
a
worse lie.
Oh, why didn't you find the gold mine? Oh, it's crazy.
He just got drunk and wandered into the woods.
Had a fucking dream.
Sick.
All right, I saw a fucking bear with no tits. Yeah, of course it's fucking flat chest. Oh, man.
If you had no feet, would you wear shoes?
What?
Then why are you wearing a bra then?
Fucking Austin. I'm going looking for a gold mine.
All right, this next story is from The Unquiet Sky. A shiny egg-shaped object about 20 feet long and 15 feet wide was seen by dairy farmer Gary T. Wilcox of Newark Valley, Tioga County, New York, in his field at 10 a.m. April 24th, 1964. Two dwarves about 4 feet tall suddenly appeared, wearing seamless clothing and a hood that covered their faces completely. Each was carrying a tray containing samples of soil with alfalfa and grass. One of them spoke to Wilcox in faultless English, telling him they were from Mars. The conversation continued for 2 hours. It seemed
that's a
that
long time.
There wasn't any time. Point where they were like, so, how are you?
hi, Gary T. Wilcox. Actually, our English is pretty good. We are from Mars.
Yep. I won't actually make a mistake during this entire 2-hour conversation. My English is faultless.
The conversation continued for 2 hours. It seemed that since their people obtained their food from the atmosphere, they knew very little about regular agriculture. They wanted a bag of fertilizer to take with them. After the Martians took off, Wilcox got some fertilizer from the barn and left it in the field. The next day it was gone. When asked if he thought the Martians had returned for it, he replied, "Well, anybody who would walk all the way to that field to get an 80-cent bag of fertilizer would be crazy."
You are a maniac.
Yeah.
Gary T. Wilcox is so lucky we have spent so much time with fucking Ostman.
Yeah, he doesn't seem that crazy.
And he's this. Just like, yeah, some aliens came down and then I hung out with them for a little bit and then I left him a bag of shit.
What did he, like, I don't understand how so he's told the story about the aliens to someone and then their question is like, did they take that manure?
Like, why didn't they take the manure before they left? He's like, yeah, they came back for that.
Yeah, why didn't he give it to them?
That was the 2 hour conversation. They're like, can you just get it now? Oh, I don't know.
Hey, it's all our way over the other side of the field.
Hey, I'm farming here.
Oh, we're going over there for an 80-cent bag. Get the fuck out of here.
It's 10 a.m., you fucking idiots.
Yeah, I don't know how it works on Mars, but around here people gotta work, huh?
What's with the hoods? What's with the hoods? Why are they covering your face completely? What's with the hoods?
Hey, what is that, a fucking egg?
What are you, chickens coming out of a fucking egg? Hey!
Hey, get a load of these shit bags. Hey, shit bag.
Hey, shit bag.
Guess what? I'm going to leave you. You!
Hey, who came first? The fucking egg or the idiot coming out of the egg, huh? You fucking idiot.
You fucking egg idiot.
You fucking asshole.
What, you get your food from the atmosphere? Like fucking morons?
They didn't even say anything. It's 2 hours of him just going.
Him just razzing them.
Hey, I see you're wearing little jumpsuits there. Jump, that's a pretty good idea if you're ever at the top of a tall building. Hey. Oh. Hey, you got a whole plate of soil there, huh? What's that, a fucking... your meal, dickhead. He's not great at it. He's a farmer.
Oh, you don't know about the fertilizer. How about I leave you a bag?
Oh, you want a bag of shit? How about your friend here?
I also like the idea that he's just like, hey, if they came back for this shit, they'd be crazy.
Yeah.
He left it in the middle of the field. He still took it out there.
Oh, I think he's saying that they must have come and got it because no one would walk to the field to get it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Like no human would have stolen that thing.
Yeah.
That's that far away. It must have been the aliens.
Yeah.
You're right. Sorry, Gary T. Wilcox. Hey.
Oh.
This final story is from In the Realm of Miracles.
Oh.
Giovannino. Little John.
Giovannino.
Could only crawl on his hands and knees through the streets of his hometown.
Can I just tell you a really quick story very quickly that I think is funny?
Yeah, dude.
A friend of mine has someone who's like a friend of theirs is Italian. Uh-huh. And they went back to Italy to visit their family. They'd never met their family before. And their Italian auntie, who she'd never met, never spoken to. First thing that ever happens is she leans out of a window when she gets to her house and goes, spaghetti? And I've been imagining that old Italian lady leaning out of a window, just saying it like 8 times before she got there, because she couldn't have known.
Spaghetti?
Spaghetti? Oh, no, is it just a bird? Spaghetti? Oh, is it a breeze? She'll be here soon.
The little John could only crawl on his hands and knees through the streets of his hometown, Foggio.
Wait, who's little John again? I wasn't paying attention.
Giovannino.
Giovannino, they call little John.
Yeah.
Okay.
In southern Italy. He was 9 years old and had been born a hunchback, an object of contempt to children his own age and an object of pity to his elders.
Oh, nice.
He was unable even to dress himself, for the curve of his spine brought his chin almost to the ground. Oh. To his parents, little John's loneliness and deformity were a source of daily and enduring heartbreak. One day, as little John was crawling along a street in Foggia, he felt someone touch his back. Unused to human contact in the street, he was startled. Suddenly, he found himself standing upright, and he caught a brief glimpse of the bleeding hand of the monk who had just touched him. Padre Pio, little John called. Padre Pio! But the monk was gone.
What does that mean? Father, P.O.
P.O. would just be his name, I reckon.
Yeah. Giovannino ran and leapt like a lamb.
Poorly.
Stumbled a bit.
Without coordination.
At the door of his home, his mother asked him in a formal manner what he wanted. Then she recognized him and fell to her knees in prayer. Padre Pio touched me with his hands, the son said again and again.
Oh, no.
Here we go again.
His father, Andrew Bolt, did not believe the story of young...
Padre Pio was born in 1887 in the village of Petrelicina near Benevento in southern Italy. When he was 17, he joined the Capuchins, an order of Franciscan monks, and for 11 years lived the quiet life of a novice. Then on September 20th, 1915, he began to experience pains in his hands, feet, and side. Doctors could find no reason for these pains and had no reason to suspect that they were the prelude to something extraordinary.
To be fair, in 1915, doctors could find no reason for plenty of shit.
I cannot explain these ones. We are dumb. On September 20th, 1918.
It's my birthday.
3 years later.
Happy birthday,
happy birthday, dude. You were born in 1918?
Uh-huh.
Crazy.
It was weird as well. Like, my dad was this hunchback character.
What?
Never really knew you that well.
You're Giovannino Jr.?
Yeah, Giovannino. <that's> You're little John? Padre Pio collapsed in agony during his prayers at the altar of the Church of Foggia. His brother monks found him there unconscious and bleeding from his hands, feet, and side. The wounds of the crucified Christ had been duplicated in his flesh. They were to defy every medical effort to heal them, and he would bear them for the rest of his life. Among the many who viewed Padre Pio as a fraud and attention-seeking trickster.
Yeah, that's what he is.
Was Dr. Riccardi, who lived in the town of San Giovanni Rotondo, not far from Padre Pio's monastery. One day, Dr. Riccardi was unable to rise from his bed. He sent for two colleagues, Dr. Merla and Dr. Juva.
Dr. Merla!
Hello.
Spaghetti. <Hey. laughs>
They concurred in their diagnosis. He had an incurable brain tumor. Dr. Riccardi was a rationalist, a scientist, and a skeptic. If his relatives brought a priest to see him, he said he would throw him out of the house, especially Padre Pio. All he wanted was to die in peace. But dying came hard to Riccardi.
Oh, no.
For he found much pain and fear in it, and little peace. One day when death was not far off, the doctor looked up to see Padre Pio standing in the doorway of his bedroom. Well.
I heard that you cannot move.
Try to throw me out now.
Who is the attention-seeking trickster now?
Well, Padre Pio was the guy who saved Giovannini.
Yeah, yeah.
So who is Padre Pio? Is he like a famous guy? Should we know who he is?
Well, this is who he is. That's what I just described.
He had the stigmata and shit.
He's the stigmata dude.
Oh.
He's the one they called an attention-seeking trickster.
Oh, okay. I thought Giovannini grew up to be the attention-seeking. Okay, no, Giovannini was just fine afterwards.
Yeah, this is now some backstory on Padre Pio. Yeah.
Okay. I've genuinely lost track because the words aren't English.
Well, you can tell one of them was Little John, and Little John got cured by Padre Pio.
So okay. How do you feel now? Okay.
So Padre Pio, who had sent for him, Riccardi moaned. So Dr. Riccardi, who does not believe Padre Pio has these powers, Padre Pio has appeared on his deathbed.
Padre Pio, he's healed some people in the past, so say the townspeople.
Yes.
But
Dr. Riccardi thinks he's
Dr. Riccardi's
now
like,
he's here hanging out with Dr. Riccardi.
Dude just cuts his own hands, that guy's bullshit.
Who had sent for him, Riccardi moaned. Who had sent for him? Padre Pio stepped to his bedside and began to pray in Latin. A peace to this house and to those. Sorry, I thought I was going to be able to speak Latin. I honestly thought that if I tried, I'd be able to speak Latin.
And your attempt was peace to this house.
Peace to this house. Yeah, I thought that Latin was singing. Is Latin not singing? Peace to this house and to those who inhabit it. Enter, O Lord, together with us, and with our humble entrance, let come in everlasting happiness. Let come in everlasting happiness.
Let VD. Everlasting happiness. That means I came. No, wait. Veni does.
Yeah.
Veni. Yeah. Okay.
Divine prosperity, joy, and fruitful charity. Let the demons run out. Let the angels come. Let the angel come.
Also, angel.
Padre Pio, touch me. Then Padre Pio asked Riccardi if he would accept from him the holy oil used to anoint the dying. Riccardi reached out and clutched the monk's hands, oblivious of the wounds in them. I accept, he said.
Does that guy always have bleeding hands?
Yeah, always.
Fucking hell.
It's gross. It's so gross. He's yuck. Just like, it's just jam. He's just jam.
Oh, God, his hand always deep in a jam jar.
He's fucking like fucking Winnie the Pooh.
Look at that man's bleeding red hands. This spaghetti.
Your soul is right, Padre Pio told him, and in a few days your body too will be right again. That Christmas, Dr. Riccardi, his health fully recovered, attended Mass at the Church of St. Mary of the Graces. The year was 1929. As the century wore on, Padre Pio's fame spread across the world, though he rarely left the seclusion of his monastery. Many claimed to have been visited by him when he was actually many miles away, and a prodigious number of cures were attributed to him. His personal manner was said to be down to earth and often humorous.
Cool.
He died on September 28th, 1968. And
that's just after your birthday. Yeah.
And yeah. His devotees impatiently await his canonization.
Oh, he's a saint now.
He is a saint now?
Yeah, I just looked
them up. Get frigged.
This says that he died on the 23rd of September.
Whoa.
1968.
Well, he died on the 28th.
He was born Francesco Forgione.
Saint Pio.
Yeah, Padre
Pio. Is it pious? Oh, no, Padre Pio.
Padre Pio.
He looks a little like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I forgot.
Which makes me believe in him more.
Yeah, I forgot that it was the 1900s, so there would be photos of him and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I was shocked to see.
Died in 1968. You're like, whoa!
Holy shit.
He was canonized
with the Beatles.
the 16th of June, 2002. He was beatified on the 2nd of May, 1999, which seems harsh to do 30 years after he's died, to fucking beatify him. Okay, yeah. Pope John Paul II made him a saint. Paranormal phenomena.
JP2.
He does look exactly like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Give Padre Pio a little search and give him a bad review on TripAdvisor. Jammy ham!
It looks like he's appeared to people after he's died
as
well.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what it just said, where it's just like people claim that they saw him even though he was nowhere near where they were.
Huh. I reckon this guy's real.
Well, I don't think there was any question that he was a real person.
Yeah, by World War One, continue Pope Benedict.
No, it says here he cured a boy named Giovannina.
Yeah, you've just gone to this the website of this book.
You're like, oh man, and then there's this Dr. Riccardi bloke. Yes, Adam. Yes. Well, there's something about a prophecy here as well. Hold on.
No, don't read a prophecy.
No, this is from thepenis.canada.
Remember that? Suck shit.
Remember that? Yeah. Adam, remember that?
I do remember that. I think about it every night before I go to sleep.
Think about Le Pen.
I bet you do, you freaking dirty boy.
He used to wear fingerless gloves to conceal his wounds.
Oh, cool. Padre Bam. Yeah.
I'm gonna freaking cure you, man.
What's up? My name's Padre Pio. This is making this sick guy feel a little better.
I snuck into Phil's bedroom.
All right.
My bleeding hands on him while he's asleep.
Oh, come on, Pio. Don't put your freaking bleeding hands on me while I'm asleep, Pio. So, I haven't read above this, but the last line of his Wikipedia is, Pope Paul VI, in the mid-1960s, dismissed all accusations against Padre Pio. Oh, my God. So, I haven't read above that, but maybe I won't.
Padre Pio, he put his hands on me.
He was wearing the gloves.
He touched me with his hands.
Yeah, okay. And then it's just a bunch of photos of popes. Well,
it's an interesting rabbit hole you've gone down.
Congratulations, Padre Pio.
No, thanks for listening. Adam uses Google Image Search.
Yeah, okay. He didn't heal anyone. It's not possible.
No, of course not.
I'm a regular Robert Timbins. Whoever Robert that guy in the bed was with the... Who was the guy in the bed who didn't believe in him?
Riccardi.
That's me.
Dr. Riccardi. Yeah. We're all a
Jimmy
Dr.
Riccardi.
Jimmy Riccardi.
Well, that's another episode then of Ooh, Spooky. Five more spooky stories and 40 more laugh-filled minutes. If you're listening still, you might love to come to our comedy festival shows. Mm-hmm. If you like the show.
Damn right.
Hell. It's us doing our own shows.
Heck.
Doing comedy.
It goes from the 27th to the 21st. 28th of March to the 22nd of April. We each have shows. My one's on at Acme.
And it's in Melbourne. Did you say that?
Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
9:45 every single day except for Mondays is my show. It's called My Compliments to the Jeff. Pretend my name is Jeff. Go to comedyfestival.com.au to look for tickets for all of these. Peter, what's your show?
My show is Peter Jones. They call me Peter Jones. Good morning. How are you? I'm Peter Jones. I'm on at 6 p.m. at the Greek Center for the entire festival. Yeah. Tickets on the Comedy Festival website.
Yep. Same. My show is called Ha Ha Cool, or just search my name, Luca Mullet, on the website. Have you guys put your codes on yet?
Yes, no, I have.
I'm just... Well, did you do 30%? I think I did 30%. So if you enter the code SPOOKY...
That's what you both said in the chat.
Yeah, yeah.
Did we?
Yeah, I did. I'm trying to search it now. Here it is. Confirmation, 30%. And if you type it in, you'll get a funny little message.
Oh!
Yeah, 30%. Yeah. Do you get a funny message?
Yeah.
I didn't even know how to do a funny message.
Do you want me to tell you what it is? I'll tell you off air so that the listeners, when they type
it
in,
a little bit of
treat. It'll be a surprise.
Luca told me earlier, and it's a personalized dick pic.
It's like real hairy for some reason,
but yeah,
too.
So if you go to comedyfestival.com.au and you do the tickets and stuff, and then there'll be like a little thing to put in a code. You put in spooky, you get 30% off.
And I'll have
30% off mine as well.
By the time this episode comes out, I'll have put that on too. Yeah. So
30% off all our tickets if you use the code spooky.
Chuck the spooky code in if you listen to this. If you don't chuck it in.
If you don't and you do... That's spooky.
That's real spooky.
Yeah, follow our socials, our personal ones and the ones for the page and stuff, and keep sending us spooky stories
Jump on our Instagram, our Twitter and our Facebook. We're at Ooh Spooky on all of those things.
Do reviews of the podcast and stuff. But in the meantime, have a nice week.
Oh, shout out to, I can't remember his name. I'll see if I can find it. The guy who, remember we were talking about Paul Jennings the other day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the guy sent in the name of the episode of Round the Twist we were talking about.
Oh, really?
Cool.
It's called Whirling Derfish.
Oh, that was
Whirling Derfish.
Morris Gleitzman on Twitter. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Huge shout out to Morris.
We'll be back next week with more spooky stories.
Chris Gentles. Thanks, Chris Gentles.
Thanks, Chris. See you next week, Chris.
Bye, Chris.